Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Surviving the Shift, a show where spirituality meets practicality, with your host, Michelle Arbeau.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Surviving the Shift. I'm your host, Michelle Arbeau. So what's up, everyone, with this energy today? I have no idea what's going on, but I have to say something before I bring my guests on because, wow, the past couple of days have been crazy in terms of the energy. I know yesterday I was feeling really out of sorts and really restless and agitated and all of that wonderful stuff, and then by the end of the day I was feeling very optimistic and happy again. So I thought to myself, either I'm bipolar or something's major, you know, something's shifting big time. So and it was interesting because I posted that on Facebook and a lot of people had responded saying they were feeling the same thing. So it's really crazy. So I thought I'd put it out there and, you know, let everyone else know that you're not crazy either and there's something happening. And someone had mentioned the solar flares. So I thought that was interesting. So maybe that's all it is. And maybe we're not crazy after all. So today's guest is quite amazing. I mean, she's got an amazing backstory and, you know, it's one of those stories where you think, you know, it looks like a wonderful life on the surface, but, you know, everyone's got their story to tell, and boy, she's got a good one. So today's guest is Carrie White, and she's a celebrity stylist, and she's styled everyone from Elvis Presley to Sandra Bullock, Brad Pitt, and her work has appeared in Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, InStyle, Allure, all of the major magazines, and she's the mother of five, and she owns and operates her own salon, Carrie White Hair, in Beverly Hills. And her book, her latest book, is Uppercut, and it's a memoir of Carrie's backstory, which I'm so thrilled to bring her on and let her share this because I think it really sheds a light on, like I said before, you know, it looks like she's got it all together, but she's got a long story to get to where she's at today. So let's bring Carrie on. Carrie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for having me and giving me this opportunity to share about Uppercut. It's my first book, not my next book, my latest. This is the book that took 20 years in the making and like giving birth to an elephant through an eye of a needle, I say. But thank you.
All right, well, let's hear it. I really want to hear some of this because I haven't read the book myself, and, you know, I intend to get a copy, but, you know, with the way I've been so busy lately, I haven't had a chance to order, but I definitely will. But let us, I mean, take us through the whole thing. Take us to your journey towards writing this book. I mean, your whole entire backstory is amazing. You can have the floor and take it away.
Well, thank you so much. Let me add something before I begin that I love Facebook, don't you? Well, that's how we met. And there was a large piece sent to me that Mars is retrograde in Virgo.
Virgo.
And I'm a double Virgo, so I'm like a spinning top full of energy and you know, I don't mind my craziness, though, actually. I work with it. I've made friends with it. And I always feel like if you can't laugh at yourself, you're missing the most fun on planet Earth.
Yes.
Anyway, yes, sweetheart. My book is kind of like Forrest Gump meets Boogie Nights. It is a story that I originally wanted to write to all the young people coming in to the hairdressing field at the age they are now in their 20s, and now I am at the top of the food chain of the hairdressing field, I feel. And I wanted to tell all the stories about the great people that shaped and influenced my life, and then it just started getting bigger, and then I wanted to talk about a woman coming into an all-male field at this time. This is the 60s, and then it started being about a mother in a career in a field, and then it started in the the history and celebrity and the field of travel, because in these days of the 60s, I know no one's going to, I'll hear chairs fall, but there was no such thing as a credit card. So,
oh, wow.
You could not say, I'm going to Paris, charge it. You had to have real money right now, and that's why only the elite got to travel. So I would pull on Betsy Bloomingdale's, who was Nancy Reagan's best friend. I'd pull on her shirt and say, what's it like in Paris? And I was 20 years old, and we were not global. We had no internet. There was no such thing as a cell phone. And you would count on people to tell you the lifestyles. I had clients who were going to Afghanistan, and I'd say, get me one of those coats. You know, I mean, we just knew about the hippies all had those lamb's wool, you know, leather coats. And it was just such a time that I really wanted to share because I had tales from the people ahead of me, my peers, from Mr. Kenneth, who was the godfather of hairdressing. I always say nobody knew who was cutting Mamie Eisenhower's bangs or who did Mrs. Lincoln's braids, but everybody in America and probably, you know, Europe, knew that Mr. Kenneth was doing Jacqueline Kennedy's bouffant. And he gave a name, his name, his fame, and a big world to a hairdresser. So it was an exciting career and field of art and social adventure and avenues for someone like me who just barely graduated Hollywood High because, well, I left algebra because they wouldn't tell me what the X and the Y was. and life was opening for me in an area that would give me so many opportunities. I got to travel and go to London, Paris, and India. I lived with Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski and did her hair for her wedding in London. I was asked to just travel through magazines, and I was still, like, in my 20s. I had 5 children, by the way, and
wow.
3 husbands before I was 29 years old. So it's a big book. It's a big story, and I really, my heart and the soul of my book is called Never Give Up, really. That would be the thread and the theme. Never give up. Never give up on yourself. I did come from child molesting, violent stepfather. My father left when I was like 3 years old. I was mixing drinks for my mother and her boyfriends when I was 5 years old, 6 years old. And I have a thread and a subtext of this book of recovery through alcoholism. And the other spirit of my book is to take the shame out of the illness so that more people can be treated from alcoholism and not die. And thank you, Betty Ford, for taking the negative into the fact that it's an equal opportunity illness, and it happens not only in grand places like the White House and not just Skid Row, but in lovely homes and in one person in a family, and it does kill families before anyone dies. So there's a lot. My mother died at 54 years old in County General Hospital, and they said she died of pneumonia, making it a shame and not saying, and nobody knew about alcoholism, or it wasn't discussed. It was such a taboo. You did not get to see your favorite movie star coming out of their 19th rehab, and we didn't have all the gossip magazines, and there was no education into the fact that there was a 12-step program available, and people were not aware of it. So that's another aspect of the story. It is a dual universe that is shared in my book, Uppercut, until it just alcoholism gets so big in my life that it becomes just very, very dark. But here I am. I'm looking forward to 28 years of sobriety, Cinco de Mayo, and I have children that let me take care of my 10 grandchildren without a worry, who came up through all this nightmare. And it's very exciting, and it's all very big. And 1,000 pages, Michelle, was cut from my book.
Wow.
Because I wrote too much. So that'll be book two, everybody. And I look forward to that.
Yes. Well, you know what? I really want to know, I guess my curiosity with the whole book and, you know, everything with your career and all of that, what led you to write the book? I mean, at what point did you say, I need to write a book? I really need to put this down on paper and get it out to the world.
Well, when I was a very young child, like 10, I knew I was going to write a book when I was trying to escape from this stepfather, and I was reading The Diary of Anne Frank, who was trying to escape from, you know, the world of Hitler in Germany. And I knew I was trying to escape from the stepfather, and I felt I had a book inside me. We all have a story, you know, we all have a book inside of us. And then years and years and years passed, and in 1989, after I had a few years of sobriety and I had come through hoops of fire and like the phoenix rising, I knew I had a story I wanted to share. And like I said, originally I wanted to talk to hairdressers coming into this field and tell them what an amazing life was offered here, the adventure and the magic of hairdressing. And then I knew I had to go deeper, and I really had to talk to people about all the history of this world that was never going back to. I mean, I wanted to tell people how we used to say, what are you wearing on the airplane? I mean, that was very exciting. And the whole fashion sense, and I could see all these things are being lost, and I just wanted to talk about people and introduce you to a lifestyle that you can't even imagine. It's just not going to happen again. We are so global and so informed. Kids, you know, 8 years old know who the name Chanel. You know, I didn't know it wasn't just a perfume, and she was alive. I did get to see her when I was in Paris on one of my jobs for Vogue, actually. But, you know, I just wanted to share the history that I felt I didn't want it to end with me. And I still have a lot of stories to tell. And I just think that they're positive and offer people a peek into the epicenter of the 60s and 70s, and I've had so many kids. In 1989, by the way, nobody had a computer. I wrote this whole book on 20 steno pads. Nobody even knows what that is. It's a spiral notebook out there. It's a spiral notebook. I wrote it by hand. And I just could not wait to share the activity. I mean, you can't believe it. Everybody I knew in being in Hollywood, it's not like I'm dropping names. My best friend in high school was a girl named Kathy Paul. She became Stephanie Powers. When I was in Pacoima Junior High, when I was uprooted into this gangland and I was in a foster home and my survival story, my close friend that taught me how to play castanets was this guy named Richard Venezuela. He became Richie Valens, who I think everybody knows and saw the movie La Bamba, perhaps. And just everybody became somebody. We were all just new budding. It was such an era of possibility. Possibility. You know, artists were coming out of Topanga Canyon, which is just an unbelievable little cult in the 60s. I mean, people like Dennis Hopper and Billy Al Bankston and George Herms and people who are all in museums now that are like were the cool school, who are amazing, influential artists. L.A. was breaking away from New York. And, I saw so much. I loved so much. And people say, if you were so abusing with drugs and alcohol, how could you remember all this and write with such detail? Because I believe the soul is never loaded. The soul is never drunk. And I believe that things that impress us and influence us, we never forget. Isn't that true for you? When you were a child, you know, something, I don't know, smell of fresh cut grass for the outdoors and seeing a first time you saw the brightest monarch butterfly fly? I mean, wasn't it just as a child? I don't know. I just have a good memory as an artist. I think I was so impacted with life.
Yeah, I find it so interesting that you wrote the book many years ago, and now it's just being published. Now, is that not true? I mean,
I've been working on it, sweetheart. No. I've been working on it for 20 years. I only got my agent in September 10. And my book came out. I got my agent in, said she wanted to be my agent. It was an amazing story. Could be another book. She was Michael Crichton's agent. Her name is Lynn Nesbitt. I'm forever grateful for her. I signed with her in January of 2010, and 30 days later, she got me this fantastic deal with Simon & Schuster and Atria Books, and that was February. And then September 2011, my book came out, September 20th. So it's only been out about 4 months, and it's only just been finished. And, oh, my goodness, there's 60 photographs. Please get the hardcover. I did sell enough books to warrant paperback in June, which I'm excited about. But the book is so beautiful. It's laser cut. The cover, you take off the cover, and it's a silver book like the curtains in my salon. My salon is all white with silver Mylar curtains. I'm still kind of like the roller girl, disco queen. And there's 60 photographs, vintage photographs. You won't even believe the pictures.
Wow. I didn't realize it was silver because the picture on Amazon just looks like it's white. But, wow, that would be
The paper's white. When you take the paper off, the hardcover is silver. It's beautiful.
Oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the silver peeks through those cuts are kind of slashes from like scissor cuts. You see the cover? Yeah.
Yeah,
and
I see it. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, that would be
really
neat.
They really went all out. I just love the book. I love the presentation that they did such a beautiful job with it, and I couldn't imagine what the cover was going to be. I had the title before I had the book. I knew I was going to have a book called Uppercut. I just knew that, and I didn't know what the cover was going to look like. I didn't have a vision on the cover. I didn't know if it was going to be a pair of scissors and a glass of champagne. I don't know, but they did a brilliant job with me, and the book is, I get so many compliments on the artwork of it all. It's just lovely.
It sounds like the whole project or the whole book itself, you know, from start to finish has been like an intuitively led journey. It seems like you've been just guided every step of the way, because you were talking about, you know, the title, you already had it beforehand, and you just knew, and you kept using the word, I just knew. So I get the impression that there must be another book, right on the tip of your tongue, or that you're starting another book. Are you doing that already?
Yes, I have about 3 pages on it. I'm still very, very busy with touring and different projects still with getting Uppercut, you know, out into the world. I will hope to... I wish I could be required reading for all treatment centers and in recovery for anything from incest survival to alcoholism or drug addiction. I wish I could have given my book to Amy Winehouse, and not that I can save anybody's life, but I have had phone calls into my salon. You don't have to call me back. I'm calling from Philadelphia, or I get a card from somebody in Texas, or I get all these things. Thank you for having the courage to be so honest and talk about your disease and illness and where it took you and survive all of this. And believe me, I'm not a better person than anybody who's been through less than me and died. I'm not one to believe in the grace of God. I don't believe God goes around gracing me and not somebody else. I don't know why, and I don't question it, because I just believe in a power greater than myself that I don't understand. But I know I'm put in places to be of service, and that's what I believe is the function of all of us here on Earth. You know, we're really here to be of service.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that, absolutely. And you know what? I commend you for, you know, bearing your heart and soul, because, I've done the same, and I know how hard it can be to just lay it all out there and, let the world see you for who you truly are. And that's exactly why I had you on the show, because, as you know, it's the Authentic You Radio Network. So we want people who are authentic, who are sharing the message that it's okay to be who you are, and it's okay to be imperfect, and, you know, it's make mistakes and mess up, and, you know, life goes on, and it's okay, you know. So, you know, it's wonderful that you're sharing your message, and I think that people need to know that your book is about more than just the celebrity lifestyle and what it's about behind the scenes. It's so much more than that. Yeah.
That just is my experience. I don't say I'm an authority on Elvis Presley in my book. I just share my experience. You know, that I had with him. I love a quote from Winston Churchill. He says, "I'll show you a successful man by his length of time in between his failures."
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I
you
love
jump
that.
Back, get going. You don't just quit. You know, it's like, oh, I had a failure. I'm never going to try anything again. Come on. Living well is the best revenge. That's kind of a theme and motto in my book. And, if you know, so what, now what? So I broke into an all-male field. It was during the time, just the beginning time of the shampoo era, where all these straight men were coming into this hairdressing field that had been dominantly gay, and, you know, all hairdressers was everybody's, like, best friend, girlfriend and stuff, and then here comes these guys that are gorgeous and in all these ladies' hair, and they were all falling in love. They were booking, you know, they were booking appointments so that one wouldn't run into the other one, who they were having, like, millions of affairs, and whether they were married or not married. It was just, it was wild and crazy, you know, here. And I think across the board, you know, probably for a lot of that going on. And so what's my point to all that? Oh, so what am I going to do? So I'm going to go, oh, gee, it's all guys. I can't get in there. I'm not going to be, you know, sleeping with my ladies like them. How am I going to be successful here? So I found my gimmick, and I tell them, I'm a girl first. I know what you want, you know. And I have my little line with them. In fact, there's a funny thread throughout the book. Anything they say, I always say, oh, that's my specialty. If they say they want it turquoise with pink polka dots, they're like, oh, yeah, that's my specialty. Then I'd go back in the dispensary and try to figure out how am I going to make it turquoise with pink polka dots. But I just always say yes and figure it out later. And, you know, we got a long time to be dead. What's the rush? It's all about the enthusiasm here and stretching yourself. And you were talking about authentic and being yourself. Here's the deal. If you want somebody to like you for you, be you. And, and it's, you know, that's important. And you don't want to be alone? Well, if you don't want to be alone with yourself, why would anybody else want to be alone with you? You know, there's just, we got so much.
I saw a quote. I have to say this because it's so interesting. I love the synchronicities of it all, because you saying that, I just saw a quote on Facebook a couple of hours ago when I was posting about this radio show. Precisely that. It says, if you can't be alone with you, who else is going to want to be alone with you? You know, that kind of quote.
Yeah.
And I find it so interesting. Yeah.
It's
so
true. There's just things here. You know, I like this. So what? Now what? What are we going to do? What's in between me and my goals and what I want? I need to take a look at that. And so many things. Yes, my life has been magical in so many ways. And I think that part of the magic has been me looking for the magic, being able to hear it and recognize it and see it and be open for it. And we need to not hold ourselves tight and walk in fear. We need to be more open to listen and be more honest. And, you know, there used to be a friend of mine who created a little product line called Sebastian Hair Products. Fantastic. We went to beauty school together. I'm telling you, everybody in my book became somebody. It was just crazy. It's so random and so far out. But anyway, So she used to say for, or her and her husband, they used to say for Sebastian, they had a slogan, the more you are like yourself, the more unique you are.
Yes, I love that. Love it.
You know, it's so great. We're so trying to stand out of a crowd or be this, but everybody's so busy trying to be like somebody else instead of being more like themselves. The more you are like yourself, the more unique and special you are. You want to be special? Be you. You're fantastic.
I agree. So, Carrie, how can we buy your book? Give us the details, your website.
You can certainly go on Amazon.com. Amazon's worldly, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't that around
the
world, Amazon?
It is. So what is your website, Carrie? I know you have
my
a website as well.
My website is thecarriewhite.com. TheCarrieWhite.com. And Facebook is Carrie White Hairdresser /author, and there's tons of things on that. And then please, everybody, follow me. I promise to entertain you. I want to entertain you. I want to dance with you. At Carrie White Hair. That's for Twitter. And
all right,
do you get Huffington Post there?
Yes, we do.
Oh, well,
there's also a Canadian version as well. I think there's HuffingtonPost.com and also .ca just recently.
Well, my third Huffington Post just got printed today. I'm out of my mind with excitement. It's called You've Come a Long Way, Oscar, and it's scandalous. It's a big scoop, so you got to go get it. You got to go online and find it. Just Google Carrie White. It'll come up even on Google, the Huffington Post. And I have three articles. One is called Let's Cut Heads, and that one's fun with Quincy Jones and a big activity with photographer Bert Stern and Marilyn Monroe book. And then the second one I did is called The King and I, and that's not an uppercut. And this is a story that I tell about, you know, after I finished cutting Elvis's hair, and a special story told me about a song that he did. So you all want to read that and click like and click fan, and then that's like a vote for me. You know,
yes,
it's a big numbers
I will
game
do it.
Here. Thank you. And then the one today is called You've Come a Long Way, Oscar, and I am so excited about this because something happened in 1973, and I never told anybody, and now I've told the world. You know, it's just such a fun little scoop, and it doesn't hurt anybody, but you will not believe it. You are going to be. I'm not even going to tell you, Michelle. It's so exciting.
Okay.
Make sure you go there.
Okay, I'll definitely check it out. So we have about 2 minutes left, Carrie, and I guess I want to shift gears just for the last 2 minutes, and I want to ask you a quirky question. I'm sure all the listeners, just because you've worked with so many celebrities, who's the, I guess, your most favorite celebrity that you've done hair for?
It's hard to say one person. You know, everybody. I'm not trying to be politically correct. Everybody's been so uniquely different and fantastic, you know. I mean, the love of my life was Michael Crichton. You know, I just loved him so much. I cut his hair for 37 years, and we just had a very special relationship. I used to even book extra time when he came in so we could talk longer. He was so smart, and I was so blonde, and he'd tell me science and interesting stories, and I'd tell him about getting high with Jimi Hendrix in London or something crazy, you know, and we were just such two opposites. I do want to say on a last note is that the best part about being able to write a book so honest and so authentic is because of the strength and foundation between my children and the work that has been done in recovery that allowed me to be so honest, you know, and I really salute them. They are the brave ones, and I really, again, thank you, Michelle, so much for having me on, and I hope everybody gets Uppercut. I wish I could give Uppercut to every single person in the world. I want you to meet all these wonderful, fun people. It's not just like a story about me and my Carrie White. No, you're going to meet Richard and Billy and people you don't know and characters of these times and fantastic. Just a fantastic heart and soul of the 60s and 70s and craziness. I mean, I did everybody's hair from, you know, what can I say, Anne Margaret to Lucille Ball and Ruth Gordon. Oh, you're going to love Ruth Gordon. There's just tons of great stories in there. Peter Sellers. There's just, I don't know. There's something in there for everybody. I hate to say this book is for everyone, but it's for everyone who was there or everyone who wished they were there. How's that?
Sounds good to me. So just again for the listeners so that they know, it's thecarriewhite.com for
right.
Carrie's website, and also you can get Uppercut on Amazon.com. So you can just type in the search, you know, go to Amazon.com, type in the search Carrie White or type in Uppercut and you'll find it. So definitely get yourself a copy.
Highlights of my Hollywood life, yes.
Yes, get yourself a copy because it sounds amazing. I'm going to get myself a copy. And thank you so much, Carrie, for coming on. I knew it would be an amazing show just because I just had this hunch that you were truly authentic. And
well, I salute you for, see how we even found each other, connected? That is the synchronicity. I mean, how did that happen out of thousands of people on, you know, Facebook?
Exactly.
Whatever. Well, I salute you. You're going to hear from me again. You're adorable, and all your listeners are so smart to stay tuned to you because you really bring some insight into this spiritual life that we do live.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Thanks again.
Thank
you,
guys.
So, everyone, tune in next time for another great episode of Surviving the Shift. I think next week we're going to do an all-readings show, and I know that was a big hit last time, so definitely do tune in next Thursday, same time, same place. Have a great weekend, everyone.